When she was 29, Melissa Plout decided that she was tired of office jobs and thought she would try her hand at driving a yellow cab. She's written a memoir about her experience of being a minority in a mostly male and mostly immigrant-dominated job, also on the passengers she had and the impact that driving a cab in New York has had on her. The book Hack, How I Stopped Worrying About What to Do with My Life and Started Driving a Yellow Cab is published by Villard, and I'm very pleased it has brought Melissa Plout to my show today. And I wonder, did you come here by cab?
I did not. I took the train.
You wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times last week about the taxi strike. You're still driving. Did you participate in it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't drive during the strike. I'm still driving. This week has been a little bit different, but yeah, I'm still driving.
Yeah, this week's different because you're doing publicity for the book.
Yeah.
But why was there a strike? That was about global positioning, things being installed in the cab, and also credit card, what are they called? Anyway, something for the credit cards. And I would have thought that in both cases, cab drivers would benefit from those.
Well, the fact is they could, just not in the form that the technology exists right now. People are protesting against quote-unquote GPS. It's sort of a shorthand for a slew of issues. The systems that are being installed are just more tracking systems. They don't do any navigation, which is something that we could benefit from, driver and passenger alike. Most drivers know after a little while on the streets, most taxi drivers know their way around pretty well, better than a GPS system. You can compete with one, and you know that there was an explosion on Lexington and 41st, and the GPS does not. However, if it gave you navigation, if you're lost in the Bronx or out somewhere in Queens, you don't know your way around, that would be great. The way it is now, it's just a point on a map, and it's an expensive televised map that blares ads and does all sorts of things that we don't need. It's overpriced, basically.
I've been the global positioning device in many cabs, and most times cab drivers will just follow my instructions. A few times they won't, and that gets me a little annoyed, but that's another matter. How many cab drivers own their own cabs?
I am not sure about that number. I actually really don't know. I think there's quite a few. I mean, there's a lot of fleets, and then there are quite a few private owners, but I don't know the specifics.
But most of the private owners, only if they are driving their cabs, are only driving them for part of the day and then renting them out to other people?
Yeah, it depends. There are so many different ways they can do it. There's two shifts a day, but a private owner can drive up to 16 hours a day if he wants, or more if they have the energy. But a lot of private owners like to make a little bit money back by leasing out a second shift per day.
So those cars are pretty much moving 24 hours a day.
Most taxis are moving 24 hours a day.
Can they handle it?
They are retired. Fleet cabs get retired after 3 years. Private cabs after, I think, 5 years. So they don't last very long.
And you, if you don't own your own cab?
No, I lease. I lease from a garage.
And how does that go? How does that work? How much do you pay?
It varies day to day, but per day, and whether it's day shift or night shift. I work the night shift, and the most expensive night shifts are the week Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and that's about $132, and then I pay for my own gas, which is, $30, $40, sometimes $50, depending on, how far you've driven.
So under $200, and that means you have to make at least $200 in fares just to break even.
Exactly. Yeah, you spend quite a few hours digging yourself out of that hole. So it's stressful, to say the least.
And what happens when you don't make the $200?
That's actually never happened to me. It doesn't happen all that often. The beauty of driving the night shift is you start during rush hour. It's sort of the beauty and the curse of it as well, because you're stuck in traffic for the first 4 or 5 hours. But that's when most people want cabs. So you spend somewhere around the first half of your shift, digging out of the hole, you break even, and that's just when business starts to die. So you're always really going to break even. The only times you might not might be, Christmas Eve or, Thanksgiving. And even then, I think it usually works out.
But it's got to be rough if you see yourself coming home with $50, $60 after having driven 12 hours.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't feel good. I mean, sometimes I've definitely gotten disgusted and, said, forget it, I don't care. I have $25 for me and $170 for the garage right now, and I don't care. I'm going back in. But, Yeah, I mean, it can happen, but it doesn't happen that often. The worst part is when, if you get a ticket or get into an accident, it's you still pay the lease fee no matter what. So that's when you can really take a loss for the night.
And you write a lot in the book about interactions between cab drivers and the police.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think cops view cab drivers?
I think they have a negative view of us.
Why?
Most of
because
them
you cut across lanes?
I think they don't like the way we drive. And, you know, I mean, most people don't like the way cabbies drive in New York. And what's unfortunate to me is that people forget that this is a job. We're in a race against time, and they contribute to it their own way by stepping out in the middle and putting their hand up. And we're so desperate for that money, we're going to stop for them. So, I mean, it's sort of...
You're going to cut across two lanes to get to a potential customer.
I try not to. I only do that if I really believe it's going to not result in an accident, but I usually avoid it.
And I've been in cabs where... suddenly somebody says, make this left turn.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
You either do it or you ignore it, and then you got the customer upset with you.
Yeah, you can't please everybody on the streets, basically.
So. My guest is Melissa Plaut, P-L-A-U-T. She's written a book called Hack, How I Stopped Worrying About What to Do with My Life and Started Driving a Yellow Cab. There are probably fewer women driving cabs than men from a small country like Gambia in New York. Why do you think so few women choose to drive?
Oh, because they're smarter than me, perhaps. I say that as a joke, but sometimes I wonder if it's true. Mainly for real, I think that there's a stigma attached to it, and that people think it's much more dangerous than it actually is. Don't get me wrong, it's a dangerous job, and it's a tough job. But
those barriers don't really do much good? Well, most cab drivers keep them open anyway.
I think you'd be offended if we closed it when you got in, you know. The barriers, no, they don't help if somebody's trying to stick a gun or a knife through them. But I don't think it's as dangerous as it once was. New York is a lot safer than it was in the 70s and 80s when there's all this taxi lore, you know, still held over from that. So I think that's why a lot of women avoid the job.
And I assume that many of the women who do drive are the widows of people who own the medallions, and they just saw this as a way to continue paying for the groceries.
That's true. Or they could sell the medallion and cash in if they bought it many years ago.
What led you to do this? I mean, there you decided you didn't want to do an office job, but there were many other things you might have done. Do you like driving? Is that it?
Actually, no. I really don't like driving all that much. I think it was more there's this mystique around the taxi cab in New York. And I think a lot of people feel that or believe in that sort of romantic idea of a cabbie. I think when they're out on the streets and they're in a cab or driving, they don't so much feel it. But just in terms, there's this mythology. And I was really attracted to that, and I had decided that I was going to have adventures, and it just seemed like the most instant adventure I could embark on in New York while living in my hometown.
So. Well, in the old days, there was this mystique because drivers drove all their lives. Now, it's really an entry-level job for many people who can barely speak English, but
yeah.
It's a way of making a living until they can get a better job. I can't tell you how many drivers have told me, well, back in my home country, I was a doctor or I was a lawyer.
Exactly, yeah. They're overqualified. Most of the cabbies in New York are way too qualified to be driving a taxi. But I think it's historically been an entry-level new immigrant job. And, you know, I do know a lot of lifers. I know a lot of 50, 60-year-old guys that have been doing it for 30 years. And, you know, they're a dying breed. But I think that's just the lot of the taxi driver.
Do you listen to the conversations of the people in the back?
All the time. It's the only thing that keeps the job interesting. The radio, no offense, can get a little boring after 12 hours.
Well, I'm not on that long.
No, but just, I mean, you know, I turn it down because the real entertainment, if people are having conversations with each other or on the cell phone, I find that to be the most interesting thing in the world. So I am somewhat shameless about turning the radio down. Usually they don't notice because I only have it on in the front. And I just eavesdrop.
And I'm sure the night shift is a lot more interesting than the day shift. You're getting a lot of business people during the day, but at night you're getting people who have just come from dinner, may have had a little too much to drink, maybe having a fight over
what happened. There are definitely
people are open.
Fights.
They don't care whether a cab driver hears their fights.
Yeah, usually they don't. Sometimes it's one person doesn't care and the other does, which is sort of interesting. But I've definitely overheard a lot of, a couple of breakups, some over the cell phone, some right there in the cab. There was one woman who even just told me how she was having an extramarital affair. And I picked her up. She was kissing a man goodbye and got in, and we started chatting, and I said, "What's going on?" And she sort of said, "Well, that man is married, so am I, and we're not married to each other." And so that sort of keeps the job interesting for me. I like that the best.
Do people also cross a line in the back of the... Sometimes?
Every so often. they'll cross a couple of lines, for sure.
On the other hand, it seems that more and more cab drivers are not listening because they're too busy talking on their cell phones. And I know as a passenger, there have been times when I've been afraid that the driver was more involved in the conversation than in paying attention to the road.
Yeah, that's something that happens, unfortunately. But part of the job can be so solitary, and we are essentially invisible to people. I take advantage of that because I find it interesting. But those cabbies that are on the phone, they're on the phone with each other, with other cabbies, and they're just sort of coping through this long shift. And what they're largely talking about is their passengers. And they're also talking about
this crazy person in the back seat.
Yeah, this annoying person, this rude person, this nice person, this couple is making out, or they want to go to Williamsburg and there's traffic on the bridge. And if I talk, I'll talk in between passengers because I don't like to do it with, I don't speak a second language, so I don't want to do it in front of people. But I like to find out about traffic. It's like an instant news alert, So it's just sort of a coping mechanism. Unfortunately, it gets taken too far and they get distracted from the task at hand every now and then, I think.
It seems like driving a cab involves a lot of waiting, either in traffic or to get your cab at the beginning of your shift at the airport. What is the protocol for a cab driver arriving at the airport who wants to take a passenger back to the city?
Well, it's different with the airport. But they both basically have these holding lots that you pull into. JFK has one that can hold up to 500 cabs. It's just one central lot.
So when those cabs start coming to the taxi stand, they have actually been sitting in a holding lot for a while?
Yeah, they've been sitting in lanes waiting, with their engines off until their lane gets activated. And then the lane files out, goes through sort of a toll booth type of structure. They get a ticket that tells them which terminal to go to, and they race there. They've been sitting who knows how long, and they get there and then wait on that line and wait for people to get in.
Now that's for New York City.
That's at Kennedy. LaGuardia is a little different, but it's similar.
But if I know a number of cab drivers have told me they don't want to take me to Newark because they can't do that.
They could get arrested. I've heard stories. I don't know if it's a myth or not, but I've heard stories of New Jersey Port Authority police standing there posing as passengers trying to hail New York City cabs back to the city. And it's tempting because we don't get paid enough. We don't get paid the same amount there and back for the one-way trip. And so some people have done it and been locked up and had their car impounded.
Well, they should let New York City drivers bring people back to the city.
It would be nice.
Have you had a really bad experience with a passenger ever?
Nothing too bad. I've had people try and beat the fare, which is upsetting.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's bad. I definitely made the mistake of chasing after some teenagers. I mean, they didn't go into an apartment building or anything. They went into a fast food place, so I felt maybe safer, but it was not the smartest thing to do. But people can be very rude. They can yell. They can take their problems out on you. And that's upsetting. I luckily have never had a really bad experience.
Does this book grow out of the blog that you created after you'd been driving for a little while?
It did. I started the blog a year into my career as a cab driver.
And then you discovered there were a lot of people reading your blog.
Eventually, there were more than I ever anticipated. And then so that sort of evolved into a deal to write a book. And there's some crossover with the blog, but there's a lot more new information. It's more memoir. It's more personal, which I didn't want to do on the blog.
Had you always wanted to write?
I did, but I had given up on it, which is funny that this led me back to it. When I got laid off from my job as a writer for advertising internet sites or something, I sort of said, you know what, this isn't working out for me. I give up. It's too much pressure. And I didn't think I would write again. I really didn't. And then it sort of came so organically that I was very comfortable with it. So it was surprising to me that all this came up, but I feel very lucky.
Well, I get the feeling that you'd like to stop driving and maybe write full time. But right now, you got to do both.
Right now, I have to do both, yeah.
And the book is Hack, How I Stopped Worrying About What to Do with My Life and Started Driving a Yellow Cab, written by Melissa Plaut and published by Villard. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.